The 100 Years' War. The first interim period, 1340 to 1345. Brittany's Succession, Part 1. Yes, this is going to be a mess. Because the Duke of Brittany is going to die, and it looked like it would be pretty easy, but then it becomes just a mess. But it's important for the war because it does delay Philip's actions in different places. So let's check this out. John III, Duke of Brittany, fell ill at Caen on his journey back from the siege of Tournai and died on April the 30th, 1341. The Duke had been a gentle, vacillating man who had governed Brittany for almost 30 years. The good Duke John had been a better friend to Philip VI than most of his predecessors. He had fought with his vassals at his own expense in 1314 and 1328. He had fought against the Anglo-German coalition in 1339 and 1340, despite his close connections with England. And he conserved the independence of his principality without abrasiveness, which of course characterized the affairs of Flanders and Aquitaine. But John III ended up committing the great sin of a duke to his duchy. He died childless. So with no heir, quote, great adventures and feats of arms, end of quote, according to Froissart, would determine Brittany's fate. Now the origin of the Civil War, which actually lasts almost 25 years and destroyed Brittany for another generation, was due to the obscurity of Breton law of succession, as well as a good old-fashioned family quarrel. So our cast of characters is John III was survived by a niece, Jeanne of Poitou, and a half-brother, John de Montfort, the son of the Duke's wife from her first husband. So Jeanne, his relatives believe she should inherit because her father, Guy, was a full brother of the dead duke who would have had the indisputable right to the duchy if he were still alive. They also asserted, by customary law of Brittany, that Jeanne, and as her father's sole heiress, had the same rights as he would have held. Unfortunately, the customary law of Brittany had never before had to answer such a question, and its effect was a great deal less clear than the submissions of Jeanne's lawyers. However, Brittany was one of the peerages of France, and the best view was that its devolution would not be governed by Breton customary law at all, but was governed by the same law which dealt with the succession to the crown of France. And in that law, women were excluded. So John de Montfort's case was simple. First of all, he's the closest blood relative of Duke John III. And second, he's the only male candidate. So how did Duke John III feel about the subject? Well, his half-brother, the father of John de Montfort, was from his father's second marriage. And John III never liked them. Went so far as to try and have the retroactively annul his father's second marriage and have all of its issues declared bastards. And also thought his father gave them too generous of an inheritance. In addition, as to his stepson John de Montfort, John III, for the most part of his reign, was determined that John de Montfort would not succeed him. In 1334, John III had proposed to simply disinherit both the candidates and sell the succession to King Philip VI. This deal only failed at the last moment due to opposition from the Breton nobility, who were concerned about the duchy's independence. Of course, this was all stirred up by John de Montfort himself. So, with that failure, the only way for John III to prevent John de Montfort inheriting was to do something with Jeanne of Poitou. The Duke knew that being a woman made her vulnerable, so in 1337 he married her to Charles of Blois, the youngest son of the House of Chatillon. Now that's a very noted military family. They have possessions in northeast France. And they also are very close to the House of Valois. So you marry off the only girl to a good qualified family connection. Well, Charles of Blois' mother, Marguerite of Valois, was King Philip VI's sister. So a better guarantee of Jeanne's succession could hardly have been found. Although the marriage contract said nothing about the succession to the Duke of Brittany, it seems that shortly after the wedding, Charles of Blois was received as the heir of Brittany at a very solemn session of Duke John III's court. Charles was made to swear that on the Duke's death, he would bear the arms of Brittany and honor its customs. So it seemed that this was the end, but it wasn't. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been a civil war. And to some extent, here's a man who's going to come from, or does come from, a very good military background. But he is so overconfident in his position, he really wasn't prepared for the other candidate, de Montfort, to decide to usurp the kingdom at the very last minute. And so he really kind of got caught without his army available to him. And it's just astounding what's going to take place in the very early stages of this. Of course, the other issue that comes into play is Philip VI. He should probably have simply come in here and said, look, this is the way that the Duke probably wanted it. I'm the King of France. I'm putting my support behind Charles of Blois, and we'll just take it from there. But, of course, Philip VI really didn't do anything. He just kind of sat back, and that's just killing him, and it's going to kill him here. Now, the sources for this, there are quite a few books on Breton history, so I won't list any of those, but I'm going to continue with the same ones I've been using. That is the Hundred Years' War by Perrault and the Hundred Years' War by Nylund, and Volume 1, Trial by Battle of the Hundred Years' War by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that twisted little beginning to this little civil war. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. And thank you very much.